I'm Muscle Project. Oh, wait, start. My Muscle Project, welcome back to the after show. Quickly becoming this most popular show of the week, which makes us think, do our interviews just suck? No, it's impossible. Now, I was thinking about, because we do have an announcement for tomorrow, actually, something exciting for you guys, which I'm going to get to in a sec, but made me think about all the interviews that we've done in the past. We've got a poster from episode 1 to 100. We really need to print off episode 101 to 200. We're going to, by the time we get that printed, we're going to have to print off 201 to 300. However, I was really thinking about how, like, when you start in fitness, right, someone gives you a piece of information, you go through, like, all these different phases, right? So, you take a piece of information. Someone tells you, say, okay, let's say how much protein do you eat, right? That's, like, usually an answer that you search for when you're starting out in fitness. How much protein do I eat? And like one guy says, okay, you need like 200 grams or whatever, or you need 2 grams per pound of body weight. And then you go and you take that as gospel. Yeah. Right. You take it as gospel and you're like, okay, and you go out and need to find that much protein. And then you probably like hear some conflicting information and you're like, ooh, now that makes you question that first piece of information that you got. But like it could have happened in any order, right? You could have heard the really low protein guy and then you go up to the high protein guy and now you're kind of stuck somewhere in the middle. You're not really sure. And then you get a third opinion, a fourth opinion. Then you start diving into heaps of your own research and you start to really see, I guess, a lot of different patterns in what people recommend. But ultimately, all the information kind of leads you towards a general target, right? You end up kind of falling in the ballpark and you start listening to more credible people. And I guess that's just like if you hear a certain opinion, normally they cite someone else, or if you look through their content, they're citing other people. And eventually what you realize is a lot of it's coming down to like 5 or 6 people in the industry that really know what they're talking about in a particular area. And you settle on, oh, it turns out all the research is pointing towards all the anecdote from clients that have worked with this coach who's coached thousands of people. And this legitimate nutrition company, it's like, okay, 1 gram per pound of body weight. It's like a good point to shoot. And you end up landing on that. And it's very hard for someone to come along and convince you otherwise. But that whole process to get to that answer, it can take years. And that's what I kind of thought like our podcast was. Like I would love to sit down and interview myself from episode 1 with just like a shitload of questions and be like, okay, cool, what do you believe? And just get my opinion on all those things. Just ask straight out questions. Because those, like how many interviews have we got? Like we've gone through so many interviews to the point where you do really have a consistent straightforward view of like certain things. Like you're pretty certain on certain areas in regards to fitness, you know, like things change for sure, but you've heard the patterns repeat so many times. And obviously as we go, we get access to bigger guests and smarter people and people that have just worked with more clients or answered a particular question so many times and have so much evidence to back it up that it's like hard to question them. And you just kind of take it for gospel. And that's what I think is so good about the podcast now is like when you listen to an interview, you can almost at this point trust just because of how we've managed to come to this guest that, okay, pretty much what they're saying is like mostly true. Like it's pretty hard to fault them, you know? Whereas in the beginning, the people were talking to you like, I don't know if John North's like the best guy on programming, you know? Like,
yeah, it's definitely evolved into, I think, better answers to the questions we give.
Right.
But also, I think the thing you realize with health and fitness doing it for so long is it's like such a broad topic that you do really never run out of things to talk about. I don't know if this was a podcast on like, I don't know, real estate finance. Like it is kind of more limited. Whereas you think about the amount of things that go into just being like really good athlete or just improving your health and fitness, it's like pretty much every single psychological topic. And physiological topic. So yep. Like you can go so deep on the back and you haven't even touched anything to do with like your mindset or right. your sleep or anything to do with it. So
right.
It doesn't really feel like you start to run out of podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, and how I got on that thought train as well was because now I'm picking up basketball again. I'm playing some real sport. And we'll talk about fake sport in a second, the sport of fitness. But I've like decided, okay, well, how can I start catering more of my training towards being better at basketball? And then it made me think, because right now I'm doing a lot of just sort of powerlifting, bodybuilding, that sort of stuff, and some rehab work for my back. And it just kind of made me think, okay, well, you would take out this, you would put in this, and then you're like thinking about energy systems. You're like, okay, so Like, would I just work, say you can't jump that high. Okay, would I just work solely on all my strength and conditioning would be just on explosive jumping work. And then I was like, okay, but what about repetitive jumping? If you can jump really high, but you can only do it once and then you fatigue and your jump height lowers, then do you do like jump fatigue training? But you know, like plyometric work is not really good to do under fatigue. So do I not do that? And then you're like, okay, so how do I just increase my, you know, my top end energy system? How do I just increase ATP regeneration as best as possible? Well, I could just do like bike sprints and stuff. And like, I wonder if it would help that. And then, you know, if you can just jump really high, then even if you fatigue, what you end up lowering your jump height to is still really high because your maximum is really high. Yes, it's like people that can back squat 200 kilos. When they fatigue, they can still squat 100 really easily for reps. So it just made me start thinking down that thought rabbit train. And then I was like, okay, what guests have we had on that talk about this? Fuck, we've spoken to so many people about this and so much information. And yeah, there's just like so much you can cover. So I just thought it was like really interesting, kind of the point that we got to. And then, yeah, I ended up drifting down all the interviews that we'd had and some pretty special stuff. But anyway, so I think probably we should comment on, people want to do hear a little bit of what we think about the CrossFit Games. It's not really like we were discussing before. Like, we don't feel we're the right people anymore. And well, one, because we're not as interested in it anymore. And two, they're just people that are better and know all the inside gossip and watched every event and that sort of thing. And those are the people you should follow. If you want to hear like all the CrossFit Games details.
And won the CrossFit Games themselves.
Yeah, and on all the events and stuff. Like, I think we're just kind of past the era now where we get, you know, Pat and or Noah on the show afterwards and we've run through every single event. Yeah, if you guys have been listening for a long time, you've seen the evolution. I mean, like I was saying, this podcast is an extension of our story as well and us trying to help you by sharing our story. And part of our story right now is like we're just not interested in following it that closely anymore. But I think what is something that we do want to talk about is like, obviously it was a big transitional point for the sport of CrossFit this year, and it will be next year as well. So just kind of from a logistics perspective and kind of how the sport stands in the community now, it'd be interesting to talk about kind of where we see it going and how it played out. Disclaimer, I didn't watch any of it. I just got fed a lot of the information and I didn't watch too many highlights because there weren't really many highlights to watch. Obviously they don't have a social media account anymore, and so I didn't really know where to go find that stuff. And like, yeah, there's plenty of other stuff that I'm into with health and fitness now anyway. So I don't want to just like talk about every single event, but there are some things that I think are important to talk about.
Yeah, it's interesting. Literally them not having an Instagram account made everyone that spends a lot of time on their Instagram just feel like it had completely disappeared.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, people are like, oh yeah, I don't even know what is happening. And like, it normally just enters my consciousness.
Mm-mm.
It's like, yes, they don't have an Instagram account, so you literally don't see it. But Rogue Fitness stepped it up, man. It really looks like Rogue Fitness, ironically, because it came out of CrossFit. I guess probably the most successful CrossFit company to evolve is like the leader in everything to do with the barbell.
Mm.
Their promos for it like make you realize they're investing so much in weightlifting, so much particularly in strongman, and I think probably their third course is CrossFit training. So they basically took over the running of the marketing the event to everyone watching.
And you were telling me that they basically don't have any of the cinematic montage sequences in between the event replays and
stuff. I mean, the obvious problem with CrossFit is that a live stream is super boring.
Yeah.
Because just, you know, you just can't really see what's going on and, you know, there's people just lifting barbells. But the highlights can be very entertaining. But it seems like that was just part of the budget cuts this year. Mm. I'm sure that stuff is really expensive.
They have no media team anymore.
So that's like what was missing from it. I think the live stream probably was better. It's kind of hard to recall, but I think it was better than in previous years. But like without the movie stuff and like those epic kind of slow motion shots they can normally produce, like loses a bit of shine. It just reminded me more of when I used to always watch World's Strongest Man. That's kind of how it was. Like, it wasn't the best viewing in the entire world, but if you just were like really love strength training, you'd be like, oh, that's sick, because like I'm watching someone do something that I do all the time, and it's kind of close and exciting.
Yeah, I think it's at a point now where I think when you're watching it, especially because they were like cutting heaps of athletes and stuff that came in, they should probably just start with the best in the world. Like, what's the point of bringing someone out from Argentina who paid like all this money and ran GoFundMe and like completely destroyed his online social media presence by just begging for money and then getting cut after one event? It's like, it's a bit silly. It's like,
it was a strange way to go about it. I think Like, I do think it looks like they are trying to make it, like, less a CrossFit thing and more a world's fittest person sort of thing.
Yeah.
And by having more international athletes, I think, potentially, like, does have a little bit of that field, that sort of feel, like, hey, we're going to find the fittest person.
Mm.
And I even felt like because Rogue kind of takes control of, I guess, the viewing of it, it did feel less CrossFitty than in the past. Because before it was like, these are like the CrossFit Games, and now we're like the CrossFit Media reporting on the CrossFit Games.
Mm.
Whereas now it's more like Rogue Fitness reporting on the CrossFit Games. So it's got that like different feel about it.
Like now Rogue might report on Strongman, they might report on this.
Yeah, and like they like run
a media
like,
channel.
Exactly. And they do like the Strongman, which is the biggest Strongman event outside of World's Strongest Man at the Arnold.
Right.
And they ran it kind of more similar to that. And they bring out Netflix documentaries now.
Right.
So potentially they might do a similar thing with fitness.
Yeah.
But it does have a similar feel to it. And you could even feel that if CrossFit completely cut the funding to the whole thing, you could see how they could just keep running it, considering now they do the equipment and they do the media for it.
Right.
And like obviously they hired mostly the same people,
mm.
But they kind of look like on the outside that they've really taken over the thing.
Yeah, I think what'll be interesting is next year because their contract with Reebok is up next year.
100%.
And then, you know, when they presented it to Reebok, when CrossFit were like, hey, we have this thing called the CrossFit Games, it's like, you know, on the uprise, oh, sorry, it's on the rise, 2010, you know, we're moving into the stadium, look at the viewing numbers, look at the affiliates, blah, blah, blah. Like all the graphs had just, they were heading north.
Yeah.
But, you know, now you're going to hand over the numbers to, you know, say whoever else comes to the table, Nike, who else could come to the table? Rogue, I guess.
Yeah.
Whatever other big fitness brands, Under Armour potentially, and just be like, hey, here are our numbers. Like, this is pretty much what you can expect over the next 10 years. It's not really growing, but it's not really declining. It's just kind of flatlined, which is just how it is. That's how a lot of sports are. And like, this is the position in the market. This is as valuable as it can be. You're not purchasing, like, I bet when Reebok first came in, it's like, cool, there's like no official shoe. There's like, none of this, none of that. There's like no competitors in it right now. Like you can own this space. Like they were probably paying a lot of money for the potential. You're not paying for any potential now because there is none. So,
well, I don't know because, I mean, it is the fastest growing type of fitness in some of the most population dense areas of the world. It's just that it's not growing in the US and similar countries to the US.
Yeah. So the thing is, right, but if you look at what the US market is worth, like say 1% of the US market is worth compared to say like 1% of China or 1% of the Philippines or 1% of India or something, like it's thousands of times more lucrative. And so, yes, you can capture a much larger portion of eyeballs, but will those eyeballs end up in dollars? Very unlikely. So, I think, you know, the people that make these decisions and sign these contracts are extremely intelligent and they would know that, hey, it's great. You're making a move into China. You're making it a more global sport. That's great. Hopefully, more people will get involved. Will this actually sell more shoes in China? Probably not as many as it would if we just invested that into the US.
If they could tweak it so it wasn't just a CrossFit thing, but it was a fitness thing. If you think about like how the
global fitness event.
If you think about like say how World's Strongest Man is, right? There's no like, oh, it's only for like, I don't know, strong fit gyms. It's like the competition of all the best strong fit gyms. Like, no, it's just like the strongest people in the whole world.
Yeah.
Arrive at World's Strongest Man. And I like, if they could get it to that point, particularly Rogue, I think would be the people for it. Hey, this is a collection of just like the fittest people in the entire world. And just detach that, like, it's also part of a business that has affiliates.
Yeah, well, then they would need to cut heaps more athletes. I think the more you need to cut the open, you need to cut heaps of sanctional events. You would just make it.
They need to like really. You could open up the sanctional events as well into like totally more broad sanctional events and how they get them. But that would be a move that I think would just make more sense than just like one business's competition. Because right now, you know, it's still like say if the F45 had a comp, it's like that. Who's the best F45 guy?
Yeah.
But if they could, I mean, there is no one really that has like a really awesome, this is the fittest person on earth, which is crazy because so many people are into fitness.
Mm.
So I feel like if they could keep branching it towards that, that would be the best outcome.
Yeah. Well, they've got a lot of work ahead of them, basically. Whoever signs the contract next year will be really interesting.
This was the last one for Reebok?
I think
you're right, yeah.
So, I think so. So I don't know. Like, obviously, if Nike or Under Armour signed up, that's like way, I think, way better for the sport than Reebok. Reebok has had 10 years and they gave it a crack, but yeah, there's pretty mediocre results, to be honest. And like, Reebok's just not that big of a brand compared to Nike and Under Armour, like in terms of their marketing, their presence, and the athletes they have on board and stuff. And just, I guess, their public persona, it just doesn't hold a candle to what they have. So be interesting to see what happens there. And yeah, like you said, I mean, things will play out. I just want you guys listening who is just, you know, we obviously don't know all of you. Some of you could be really good competitors, but I think if we treat it more as a sport and not a sport that you need to involve yourself in heavily, the more you'll start to enjoy your own health and fitness journey and appreciate what they can do. Just in the same way, you know, I can go down to the courts and play a bit of social hoop or whatever, but I don't now start dedicating my life trying to make the NBA. You know, and that's what it was like. It was like people were like, okay, I think I can make the NBA. And they started training like an NBA athlete. And tell you what, right now, if I was like, okay, I want to try and make it to the NBA, my body would really start to fall apart, right? And I know that for a fact, because right now, my left knee and my left ankle really sore.
You're
and
tall
I played,
enough, at least.
Yeah. I'm tall enough for point guard. And I played an out on socially, you know, and that's nothing. You would have to do 4 or 5 hour days. You would have to have like, a strength coach and nutrition coach. You'd be jumping, plyometrics, skill work,
hand-eye
coordination. Yeah, like everything, right? But this is the thing, right? That's how people view the sport of fitness.
You know what? I think they have done a really good job in actually fixing that. Because the problem was before was it was all about participation. It was like everybody's dream just to get to go to regionals, because then you could just spend all weekend, be an epic weekend. You get heaps of photos and, you know, to get to do all the mad workouts there. Whereas like now that doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
And then the next level was just like most people, I'm just going to go to the CrossFit Games to participate, because I got an epic 4 days of workouts, like highlight reel, all this awesome shit. Now it's like no regionals. And then if you get to go to the CrossFit Games, very likely you'll do one workout amongst 70 people and then immediately go to the airport back home. And you didn't even get to visit a good city in America.
Yeah.
So what they've done really is like, unless you actually plan on going there to win, it's not worth it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with that. I just want people who are still holding on to let go.
But I think that's the thing. And I think that's why most people don't get too wrapped up in other sports. It's because like, even if you get pretty good and pretty mediocre at it, you know, the return is not that amazing. People are aware of that, right? Like if you really get into cycling in your 20s, you're not going to be in the Tour de France. You're just going to be at like local cycling races and no one's going to know. I think the sport of fitness is moving more into that fitness market, because it's not 100%. Propped up. But it's not propped up by a company pouring money, like losing money into it. So it's falling more into that category now. Whereas if you are like the very best in the world, it's still sick, because you can still make money. But you need to honestly be in like the top 10.
Yeah, which is exactly how sports should be.
Yeah, and it's exactly how most sports are. And that's why people don't go too crazy in it. Because before, there was this level of like mediocreness.
No, I think a lot of people are still going pretty crazy over it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I think they're that's going
to... It's getting less. Yeah, it's getting less. I'm just saying for the people that are left, that haven't quite realized that it's moved on, it's moved on.
Well, I think that will happen with a lot of the athletes, because I think this would have been so like devastating for a lot of the athletes. That basically, their four-day weekend that delivered all their results to their sponsors in the past was cut to be like 3 hours amongst 60 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of those people honestly look like within their first few weeks of doing CrossFit. Fucking chaos.
Yeah.
Absolute chaos.
Yeah. It'd be really interesting for guys who... Anyway, I think we've talked enough on it. Yeah. There's a lot for them to figure out. How it plays out, I'm sure we'll know in due time. All right. We've got some listener questions this week. Before we dive into it, as always, we like to give out some t-shirts. So thank you for everyone who's been leaving reviews. In case you're hearing this for the first time, if you leave us a review on iTunes, the top 3 reviews every week get a free piece of apparel. If you hear your name read out, all you got to do is email us at orders@themindmuscleproject.com. Some people were messaging you and saying it wasn't working. That's because you were putting @mindmuscleproject.com. It's @themindmuscleproject.com. We are the only Mind Muscle Project. So, first one goes to Jason Plummer from Australia. So, thank you, Jason. The next one goes to JJ Wisenhunt from America. Thank you to JJ. And the last one is from J Ryder 1992. So thank you from Australia. So thank you for leaving your reviews. That was a pretty funny review from the last week. He actually won a shirt for this review. I'm just gonna see if I can find it. He read it out and read it out. It was actually hilarious. This is and this is just evidence for you guys in case you wanted to know. Okay, this is how you win a shirt, right? Because we read and we pick our favorite three. So Troy Rose, who's claimed his apparel, he said, Lock and Raff are an awesome team. Their trademark banter and wit, perfect charm, offensive, allows conversations. Okay, this modern day CrossFit odd couple who look like an avatar and a young child when sitting side by side.
Fucking nailed it. He won a shirt,
Yeah, he did. Last week.
Should have won a spot on the podcast.
An avatar. That's fucking... That's good.
Incredible.
That's good.
That's what you get when you watch the video version of the show.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. So let's jump into the first listener question this week. So this person does want a name anonymous, so you will. Hey, guys. What are your thoughts in regards to macro counting leading towards obsessive eating disorders? I have been counting macros for a while, and now it's become apparent lately just how much I rely on it and how the thought of stopping it sends me into a spin. Let me know your thoughts. Now, great question.
Yeah.
Really good question because obviously counting macros is like a really fundamental part of nutrition. Doesn't matter any notable coach or textbook that you open, It has mention of calories and it has mention of macronutrients. So there is importance in it there. They don't all necessarily prescribe counting, but they do bring it up. So they will recommend, you know, based off your body weight and this and that, they'll give general guidelines as to how many calories you need for X goal or Y goal, protein, carbs, fats, how that all fits in. And there's a ton of research around, you know, subjects eating or participants eating this much protein and the results or carb, high carb versus low carb and high fat versus low fat. And how do you think they measure that? They measure that by counting their macros. They're not going to do science and just be like, hey, dude, eat more fat and eat less carb. They're not going to leave it up to the participant. They're going to give them X amount of fat, X amount of protein, carb, et cetera. You get the point. So absolutely, if you struggle with, you know, nutrition and you struggle with hitting the right quantities, because quantity comes first, but it's a close second, obviously, is food quality. But yeah, if you struggle with quantities, a really good way is to track. There's just no other way around it. Like bringing awareness to, you know, what is on your plate and what it equals in the grand scheme of how much food you need in a day, it's invaluable. It's taking advantage of, you know, modern technology that we have. That's why we have it. And it can make the journey, you can speed up the journey so much easier than just trying to figure it out intuitively. So if you create if you go into counting, our recommendation is always do it for a week. Do it for a typical Monday to Friday and then a typical Saturday and Sunday, because those two data sets always seem to vary quite significantly. But I think it's just a really good awareness tool. Now, how much you continue to use it beyond that is personal preference. Long term, I would not want to see someone continuing to use a counting app for longer than, say, probably a good, like 6 months would be the limit. If someone's still relying on a counting app after 6 months, I'm saying you're just not paying enough attention or you're becoming obsessive about the numbers in terms of what's on your plate. And 6 months, even then, is quite a stretch. How you can do it is like once you figure out your maintenance, I think that's why you need a little bit more time, is because the number that you're essentially trying to find is maintenance. How much can I eat with my regular training schedule and just my normal work-life stress to just not move my body weight? And most people are probably sitting around maintenance. So once you figure out what maintenance is, then it's easy, because then you can just say, okay, just add, you know, whatever it is, double the size of your protein just for breakfast and see what happens. And you double it and you start putting on a little bit of weight. Awesome. Now you're in a surplus. That's how much it was. And then if that's your goal, just hang there. And then when your weight stabilizes, cool. Just bump up the carb at night. So you have, like, you know, one cup of rice, let's do a cup and a half. And then you just go up from there. You never really want to like count like fiber and veg. Like, you do want to count fiber, but it's hard to overeat fiber unless you're like really trying.
Has
or you're eating Quest bars. But in terms of just like vegetables, like green leafy vegetables, just smash heaps of those. Like, shouldn't really count those. It should be more like, okay, I didn't eat enough of them today. But you can't, well, you can overconsume anything, but it's going to be very hard to overconsume green leafy vegetables if you're only sitting down for like 3 to 4 meals a day.
Yep.
But in terms of like during that sort of figuring out the maintenance phase and finding out where you're at, I'd say after that, it can be easier to just go intuitively from there, add a little bit, subtract a little bit, once you kind of know where your baseline's at. Once you can look at any plate, and this shouldn't take more than a month or 2 months, once you can look at a plate and go, I know roughly how much protein's on there within 10 to 15 grams, like you're pretty set, because at that point from there, you can obviously figure out carbs, you can figure out fats, and you can kind of just, you know, use that flexible approach wherever you go. This part of this question is, okay, great, but now I'm relying on this tracking and I'm a bit stuck and I feel like I'm a little bit obsessed, and thinking about letting go is potentially, well, you said send you into a spin. I guess you think you'll get some kind of massive swing or negative result. Here's the reality. If you put your tracking app down for a week, and you just said, I just said, okay, everything you've been in, you know what you ate yesterday. Why don't you just try and stick to that as closely as possible for a full week without the app? You will very unlikely, depending on where you're at in this point, let's just say you're in, I assume if you're tracking pretty well, you have pretty good control over where your weight's at. Your weight's not fluctuating, it's not out of control or anything. I would say not much will happen. A week could go by if you just try and aim to eat as best you can. Hey, you're going to be a little bit off there. You might have not weighed that thing correctly, or you haven't weighed anything, or you're just kind of eyeballing things. It's very unlikely things are going to change. Very, very unlikely. Now, I would say anyone that feels like they are relying on their tracking app too much, yeah, it's not a good thing. Like, I'm just going to let you know right now, you don't want to have to rely on that. So take that first step. Take a week off of it. And what you'll realize is, you don't need a computer, you don't need a cell phone to tell you how to eat correctly. Like, you've been doing it. You've been following the phone correctly. Now you're set up to do it. So just stick to it as best as you can based off that memory. And things in the body happen slowly, right? People that see massive weight fluctuations, that's just water weight. The only way you can move weight very rapidly, so like building muscle and losing fat takes time. It takes good 2 or 3 weeks for like real change in weight. However, moving water, so like if you step on the scale and they're like, fuck, yesterday, man, I put on 3 kilos, it's all water. It's the only way you can take that much water. That's why fighters can cut 10 kilos in like 48 hours, because I watch my brother do it all the time. It's because they just have methods of just stripping the water out of their body. You carry heaps of water in your body that you can lose very easily and gain very quickly, just depending on what you ate the night before. So any weight fluctuation there is not body fat, and it's not muscle mass. And if it is, it's almost an insignificant amount. So if that is what you stress about, if you worry that, oh, as soon as I stop tracking and it's not 100% accurate, I'm going to get fat, or I'm going to lose muscle, or whatever the fear is, and I've had these fears as well, they're unfounded. It doesn't happen that quickly. Now, you know, if a month goes by and your weight's really starting to drop, okay, now you might need to get back on the app, kind of figure things out again, program yourself to kind of know exactly how the meal should look. Take photos of them. Take a photo of a meal so you can roughly size it up and get it accurate the next time that you sit down for the meal. That's going to give you a pretty good indication of, like, you know, staying in the ballpark of what those numbers are. Now, I feel like I just spoke a lot. Mm. Did you want to add something to that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess to put it in a slightly different way, the biggest mistake I've made and I see people make with the tracking apps is you use it like a game of Tetris, where every fucking day you're just eating whatever. And then you're like, oh, now I can eat whatever because I can just track it in this app and make it fit perfectly at the end of the day.
Mm.
But you end up spending so much time on that app. Like, you're just always looking at it, like, oh, I got to look up this food and, like, trying to work it out. And it
comes a game.
It's really not a good way to eat in the long term. I think exactly how you described it, and I wish someone had told me this when I first started using it, and it's how I use them now, is just they're so useful to set up your diet. You just, like, put in everything you'd like to ideally eat in a day, work out, okay, perfect, that's going to work, okay, add in a meal, okay, now I've got my macros, like, sweet, now I'm just going to run with this every day and try and hit it, rather than having to put in every single meal in the long term, because it's just no fun having to spend extra time on your phone. I think particularly extra time on your phone around meal times, you become that person that's just like, you know, phone in their face while they're eating, can't even see the food they're eating while they eat it. So I think that is a much better way to use it, is try and set up your diet with the app and then go for it. But I did look up a couple of studies, and what I saw is that the more likely you are to have an eating disorder, the more likely you are to be using the app. So they found like more people with eating disorders, more likely to use the app. But I think that's what lends people to think using the app gives you an eating disorder. But they also did a really big randomized study where they had people like using the app, weighing themselves, not using the app, all that stuff, all the different options. And using any of the tracking apps didn't contribute to actually developing eating disorder.
Right.
So it's more that really just people with eating disorders love to use MyFitnessPal. Yeah. But if you start using MyFitnessPal, unlikely you're going to get an eating disorder. It looks like more likely you're just going to stop using it because you don't enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't just really, really have a think about why you're on the app and your fear about when you stop, what might happen. And generally, if it is to do with fat loss and muscle gain, your fears are unfounded. If you're a professional athlete, you need to be tracking. Like if your performance dips 1%, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But most people listening to this show aren't that person.
Also, when you train really hard, it's just so different because you actually have to change your diet in response to your training. You're like, oh, yes, this session was just crazy. Like more than this much I ever volume, thought.
Heart rate moved,
I need like an extra 200 grams of carbs.
Right.
And if you live, which sometimes how it is even for me, I'm like, massive session, I'm going to eat extra. Normal person, it's probably fine. But I also think, you know how there's that type of trend? People are like, oh, as soon as you put someone on MyFitnessPal, they develop instant eating disorder. That shit is also bullshit.
Right.
That side of it, I think...
Well, that study proves
people,
it.
Yeah, they just get so anti it.
Yeah.
It's just not the case.
Yeah. Think about it like with your training as well. Like if I told you, okay, you know, the goal is to get stronger legs and increase your squat. Okay. You need a program for yourself to increase your squat. What do you think you're going to do? Okay. You're going to write up a bit of a plan. Probably going to write some numbers down. You know, okay, I'm going to need to hit roughly this rep range. We're going to need trained legs probably this time a week based off results you've had in the past. And then you're going to start that program. And then as you go, are you going to track everything obsessively? Yes, you could be that person that does it. And then are you also going to be that person who's like, okay, last week I did this. I'm going to try and add a bit more there and do a bit less reps and do this and kind of listen to your body and see how you feel. You could also be that person. And then you could be the person who completely wings it and just completely forgets what they're doing. They just know they need a squat and see how they go. All people are still going to get some results. All people are still going to increase their squat.
It's the classic like diminishing returns. So it's like starting to use the tracker in the first place is like writing your actual program.
Right.
There is really big returns on that because you go from just scattered bullshit in your workout to progressive overload.
Yeah.
But then as you start tracking every single workout and then you start tracking every single rep and then you start videoing every single rep and uploading it and comparing it to the previous video of the previous rep.
Yeah.
It's a diminishing return.
Right.
And then, you know, you're barely seeing a fitness improvement and you're investing so much extra time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was going to say. I was like, where do you think the best point to land is? It's somewhere in the middle. Yeah. It's where you kind of every week you're tracking a little bit so you know where you did last week. But yeah, like you said, you're not obsessive and you're not completely winging it, right? And that's going to give you the best results for your time investment because... Let's face it, we're all sitting here. We're not like necessarily trying to step on stage and be like 4% body fat. If you are, obviously, it's a much harder goal. You need much more specific boundaries. And if you're going to the CrossFit Games or if you're, you know, playing in the NBA, you need very specific training guidelines and boundaries. But most of us are just trying to be healthy, be fit, be ready for whatever adventure we want to take on. And, you know, that doesn't involve insane tracking, but it involves some. It involves some. So hopefully that was helpful. I riffed on that question for quite a bit, but look, really good question. I wish I could thank you personally on the show for asking that, but you did choose to remain anonymous and I don't really want to get sued. So next question we have is from Grant Satterwaith. He asks, hey guys, just curious to get your thoughts. If you could only pick one lift, one conditioning movement, and one core movement to do for the rest of your life, what exercise slash movements would you choose and why? Do you want to start this one?
I thought when you first told me this, it was just one conditioning movement.
Yeah, I misread it. I misread it.
Okay. Conditioning movement.
Wait, hold on. Can I just give some just prelogue to this question? Is it prelogue? Prologue? Epilogue?
I don't know. Just get started before we get embarrassed any further.
I don't like saying this stuff because, you know, if you ask me... a month ago, I'll give you a different answer.
Yeah.
If you ask me a year ago, I'll give you a different answer. And why I'm giving you a different answer is because just based off what I want to achieve, I just think things are different. And based off results that I see, I think things are different. Like We did an after show 5 or 6 shows ago where I talked about back squatting. I don't think most people need a back squat. I think I called it like why you should never back squat again. Because at the time, I felt very passionately about back squatting and back pain. And I gave some, I felt like at the time, I gave some really good points to it. Since then, I've done a little bit of back squatting. Not very heavy, but I was like, you know, I can't fear this movement forever. I got to practice it and do some of it. And I've been back squatting. Yeah, it still causes some irritation, but I've just been keeping it light, practicing my form, practicing my bracing and all these different things. Because I'm like, look, people are going to want to come in and back squat. And like, I'm going to have to be able to help them. So I need to work on it myself so I can keep prescribing good advice. I still stand behind a lot of the points I say. I still don't think a lot of people can do it correctly or ever will be in the position to invest the time to do it correctly. But I don't think you can just like completely write it off forever. So yeah, I just wanted to say that before we jump into it.
So favorite conditioning exercise of all time. I think I would definitely would have said some sort of air dyne in the past, but I think that's actually more of an angle of what do I think I could do forever, and it's so low impact, I think I could.
Yeah.
But if I could do one forever, it would definitely be running.
Mm.
It's no argument. It's the most functional cardiovascular thing there is. And I think there's more variation. I've been doing some... I've like finally had the courage to bring back out the weight vest after the incident we won't go back into. So, I finally had the courage. I'm starting to do my weight vest in public again.
Hold on. Do you think you would have the balls to wear the... So, in case you don't know, rest of the world, there's this event called the City to Surf. And it's basically like the Boston Marathon. It's like this huge running event in Australia. Right, so just imagine like millions of people rocking up for a running event, and I'm walking it this year. But I thought, fuck, it'd be really good to walk in a weight vest.
Yeah,
not a good idea, eh?
Nah, not a good idea. I actually chatted about this exact topic with Andrew Papp because he did it in a weight vest.
Oh, he did.
But he was saying how like they first got an army weight vest, and they're like, no, it's like such a bad idea. It looks even more like a terrorist. Right, right. And then like, but I think that it was like part of some sponsored thing. So they kind of.
So got how do you wear? What weight vest is safe to wear?
Oh, I don't think any weight vest is safe to wear. I've realized that. So I think walking with a weight vest is a mad exercise.
What
right?
if it was pink?
No, so I realized with it is like you have to look like you're doing a workout. And if you're like wearing a weight vest and not looking like you're doing a workout, that is what really raises people's eyebrows.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like when you see someone working out, you're like, oh, like that's stupid. But like, he's, you know, he's one of those stupid workout guys.
Right, right.
Whereas my biggest mistake with the weight vest was like, walking super relaxed and like just not looking like I was doing
with like
workout.
A hoodie on and shit, yeah,
like,
sunnies.
Really looked like I was trying to kill hundreds of thousands of people in a public arena. So now, like, basically, as soon as I put the vest on, I start running. So I'm like running and I'm sweating. I got the workout headphones, right. And I'm like so clearly doing a workout here.
Yeah, yeah, maybe you could have like your shirt off, sweatbands on. Yeah, like high socks, short shorts,
and then
shoes.
Even I did like basically like an hour weight vest run. It's really hard. Like, it was 25 kilos. So, uphills, I had to walk.
Mm.
And even when I'm walking now, I, like, smile and look around, like, you know.
Like, hey, I'm not a terrorist.
This is a workout. This is a workout. So, I have changed it. But anyway, back to this original point about running. I've realized that, man, there is... And back to my old days of training for rugby, I used to run a lot of hills. Running is so versatile. Like, you can run uphills with a weighted vest. You can run long distances. You can sprint. Like, you can really hit all aspects of conditioning once you get your mechanics good.
Yeah.
So I think it is the best.
Yeah. So Raf and I have been using a activity tracker that we'll speak about more at a future date. But I'm just recently getting back into some basketball, and obviously it's like tracking all my metrics during the sessions. And you know, I did a session
like points scored. That would be a good activity.
That'd be sick. And I got up in like a 2-hour session. I burnt like 1,600 calories. Now, I don't know how accurate these things are in terms of calorie burn, and I'm not going to like, okay, cool, now I can eat 1,600 calories worth of burgers. Nothing like that. But I never tracked this stuff, and I thought it was really interesting to see. My max heart rate got up to 194, which is
You've always had a high heart rate, though. Remember we used to, like, not high, like your max was always high.
Right, right. But my point is, if I went to 194 before, I would be thinking about the fact that I went to 194.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't think about it once playing basketball, right? And basketball is like, it's a lot of running, stop, start.
Yeah.
Sprinting, side to side, jumping, that sort of thing. And so it just made me realize, I'm like, wow, you can, because, you know, before I was like, cool, get on the bike, like hit it between this zone, do this, go for this long. And it's boring and it sucks. And the trade off is not worth it anymore. You know, before I'm like, okay, I have to get this conditioning in because it's going to mean I'm going to be fitter, which means, you know, a higher ranking in the open, which means a better score at regionals or whatever. None of that matters to me anymore. So, now I'm like, okay, if I'm going to go do some cardio, I really want to enjoy myself. And, you know, I just had so much fun, right? I just enjoyed playing the sport so much. I missed it. And I got a sick workout in. I got one of the best cardio workouts I've done for ages. I was sweating. I didn't think about it once. I had fun. I didn't get any injuries or something. That's obviously probably the risk with sports, is that you obviously can get injured versus like just sitting on a bike, you're not going to get injured. To answer the question, it's running, right? It's because you can take running anywhere. You can take it to the court. You can take it to the field. You can take it on holidays with you. Like you said, you can do so many different variations of it. And I think if your answer is not running, if you have some kind of issues with running or not in terms of like, oh, I hate running, running sucks. I guess if you're that person as well, you probably need to check yourself.
Most people that criticize running just run poorly themselves.
Yeah. But also, I just think like if you have an injury, for example, that's stopped you from running, like work to fix it and work to rehab it and get back so you can run again, because it is such a natural human move. Well, it's a natural thing to do. To do it well is not natural. As you heard on episode 250, Dr. Romanov talked heaps about running, which was like one of my favorite episodes we've done for a long time. Just like being able to get out there and just like start moving around and start running. It's really important to be able to carry your body weight like that. And that is honestly my biggest issue with, say, like weightlifting, powerlifting, and like bodybuilding, is they don't do any running.
Yep.
They do cardio, but then don't do running as their cardio because it bangs up their joints heaps. And I just don't think that's a good thing. If you like can't run because it hurts too much.
For sure. It's why I love even like, say, with MMA and boxing. Obviously, there's like no running in the sport.
Yeah.
Unless you get really scared, you run away.
Running around the ring. What's he doing? He's practicing his running away. He's just running
but,
in circles.
But those guys run. Yeah, I don't know exactly about the details of MMA, but I just been watching like...
No, they run.
Yeah, they run. They hit road work, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is sick. And I do think, I mean, like you said, right? Like you can make cardio fun. Probably the main reason people do like often non-fun cardio is it really is a good way to build mental toughness and just like push through.
Yeah.
And running is such a good way to do that. You just get started and very soon you start like doubting yourself and you know, developing that mindset.
Well, there is more movements to get to. One core movement, and then he wrote one lift. Okay,
I got the core movement. I know exactly what it is.
I got the lift. The lift is the deadlift. I think it's just like the best movement out there because obviously you can just put heaps of weight on the bar. But I also think that, it just works the whole body. Like you can go into the gym, and I think also deadlifts need probably a bit less warm up than squats.
Yeah.
Just because you're not,
for most people, yeah.
Yeah, you're just not going through as much hip flexion or as much ankle flexion or as much knee flexion, so you don't need to warm it up as much, which obviously is just good from an efficiency perspective. But I think also it's just once you get it down pat, it's harder to get wrong than the squat. So much can affect the squat day to day, how you've been sitting, or like if you've got a tight hip from leaning a certain way during a movie or sitting too much at your desk at work can really affect it. I think it affects deadlifts less. You can just go and do a really good deadlift session. That can be like your whole workout.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I think the only thing that changed my mind a little bit was just what Stuart McGill said. How he was saying some people are super not suited to deadlifts, which I already knew, but I still thought it was a good exercise.
Well, I thought they could do some variation.
Yeah, he did say a variation. Yeah. So I think that would be the only caveat I guess he changed my mind on, was just like for some people, hammering just the classic lift is really not a good idea forever, even if you work on it. So I'd probably agree with the movement. And it's such a good one because it also just trains you how you generally live. Like your feet are in contact with the ground and your hands are in contact with the weight.
Mm.
And that's like usually how life is.
Yeah.
Very rarely is it just the weight crushing through your spine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also like bench press, like your feet aren't even... They might be on the ground, but it's not really an important point of contact.
Yeah.
Which is unrealistic in general for your life. Yeah. So it's a good one. And if I was to pick a core exercise... Absolutely zero science behind this. Hanging from a bar. What do you even call it? Like windmills. Windmills with your feet.
Oh, yeah. Windscreen wipers.
Windscreen wipers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Windscreen wipers. I do like them when they go to the gym, to all the way to the ground and their feet almost brush their nose. So you got like mad supple hamstrings and strong hip flexors.
Yeah.
But it trains like all through your lats, scaps, and then obviously you get your hip flexors and you get your obliques because you're going down to the side.
Because
you only need to get one.
Mm. Yeah. Well... I guess if I could only pick one, I'm just thinking about the one I do the most, and side planks. I prescribe it the most and I do it the most. And that is just because what I like about the side plank is it involves like quite a few different, obviously, components of the core. Like some anti-rotation stuff as you're trying to balance. But I also like how it helps the shoulder stabilize because you've got to have like a pretty strong scapula to kind of hold yourself in position as well. And then there's also just like heaps of really good variations that you can do from the side plank, like how you do the retrues into like, thread the needle.
Yeah,
that's what it's called.
Yeah.
And then you can do, like if you do thread the needles, just regular holds and the hip touch where you lower your hip, touch it and come back up. That's like that's really good stuff.
I feel like you sneakily got three exercises in there as your one exercise.
I did. Yeah. I did. Yeah, but I mean, you could say windscreen wrappers, you know, it's the left side, the right side.
Yeah, that's true.
But also it's just like you just very rarely hit those muscles.
Yeah.
How you hit them.
Yeah.
So I just think it's a really good kind of preventative exercise. Okay, that was a long answer to that question. We did have another listener question, but we'll leave it for another time just because
we've got Netflix.
We are almost at an hour today. That's a big after show. So before we jump into the Netflix review, guys, we have been incorporating, and I think anyone that's listening to this there's a few people that can get heaps of benefit out of it. There's the person who has a coach, a remote coach. There is the coach that has remote athletes. And there is also the in-person PT who has in-person clients. Or they have both. And then obviously like the in-person athlete as well. Now, how we've incorporated Creature is our coaches do have some online remote clients that they work with. So people that have left the gym and they still want to work with their coach. And we never really had a good way of doing it. And then of course, like the extra programming that we do in person for other people. And so what we realized is TrueCoach is, it's been in front of our eyes the whole time, but it's this like ultimately complete program where we can give it to our coaches. They have a profile and they can load all their athletes into it. They can store all their athlete data so they can have progress photos, waist measurements, weight measurements, and then they can just have the extra programming that they got for them. And then the best thing is, if that athlete goes on holidays or whatever, they can program some extra stuff for them. The athlete knows how to use it. And you end up with this really, really encompassing all-in-one accountability tool, which is, I know it was never built and was never necessarily intended. It was like really for just like pure remote programming and like really detailed stuff. But what it's just really good for is accountability. Just when someone, you can't see them face to face or whatever, you can just load their program in there and they can do it. And it can just be something really simple. So that's how we're integrating it at the gym. Our coaches have all their athletes' profiles loaded into TrueCoach. They just monitor everything. Through that, they monitor the kind of the extras program, the injuries, their weight tracking, the measurements, all that sort of stuff. So we think it's an essential tool. Like I think it adds so much value for the client when they use it. It's so easy to use. You can even transfer athletes amongst coaches. You can load programs. Our coaches have done injury rehab programs. They've saved it in the program library. Now any coach can swipe that and load it into anyone's profile in the future. So you're getting so much leverage there. You're getting so much. You're just saving so much time. You're getting so much efficiency and effectiveness from this tool. So if you guys want to get a sample of it, if you want to get a 2-week trial, go to truecoach.co/MMP. You pick yourself up a 2-week free trial and then 50% off your next month. So it's a great deal. You guys should definitely check it out.
If you're one of those three people, you have to be insane not to.
Yeah, I check it every day now with my clients on like my in-person 100%. Clients. Yeah, it's so good. And they love it. They see the X. They're like, oh man, I've got to turn that into a tick.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, it's really good.
Cool.
So we watched a movie, a few people have sent this to us, and it kept popping up in suggested for me, The Iron Cowboy on Netflix. So I would suggest right now, if you have an opportunity to watch it and you haven't watched it yet, most likely if you're into fitness, it's probably popped up in your feed, definitely go watch it. Iron Cowboy. What are your thoughts, Raph?
So this guy does 50 Ironman, which is 4-kilometer swim.
3.86.
Yeah. But with poor directional skills that I have, that'll probably be 7 kilometers. Yeah. It is tough. And then, what is it, 100-kilometer bike ride?
180.
Jesus.
Yeah.
180, yeah, it's a bit over 100 miles.
Yeah.
And then a full marathon to finish.
Yeah.
So, I think if you are like awesome at Ironman, it takes 8 hours.
Yeah.
If you're like very well prepared and going to hit a really good Ironman, it's like an 8-hour event. So, it is long. It is a really long event. And he does 50 of those in 50 days in 50 different states of America.
Crazy.
So, obviously, it is an absolutely crazy event. I do like documentaries like this, and this was a pretty good one. My
7 hours, 52 minutes.
Is what?
Is the current Ironman Hawaii course record that was set in 2018.
Mm. So, that's probably, that's probably generous. 8 hours Kona. Is very good.
Yeah.
A very good time. He obviously goes slower because he's doing a lot of these.
Yeah.
He's basically starting at like 7 a.m. every day, doing it all day, and then traveling while he sleeps in a van, the very beginning on a plane from Hawaii.
Yeah.
So, my only problem with this is that just the main character in it is super unlikable. So I found in previous documentaries, you like really like the main guy who's doing it.
He's unlikable.
Well, I just like didn't really like him. Because I don't know what it was about him, but it was something that he was just like, first half documentary just like was complaining about stuff nearly the whole time. Like people not donating enough money, like somehow he was entitled to loads of donations. And then being really surprised that when he did it on an elliptical, instead of actually running a marathon, people would get upset about it. So I don't know, for me, like I just like didn't really get around the main character.
I actually thought we were going to not talk about those things because it does kind of spoil some of the excitement of it. But there were multiple times in the documentary that like they were kind of building it race by race and you're like, fuck, I don't know how he's going to make it or not. And then some guy would just jump in, make some comment about race 35. You're like, and you're up to race 16. You go, okay, well, I now know he makes it to 35. So they did kind of miss a few steps there. But I think what this guy achieved is pretty phenomenal. I was having a discussion this morning with Ev and she was... We're comparing David Goggins' book to this guy. And I'm thinking like, wow, what this guy did is David Goggins-esque. It's pretty insane. Like his suffering level would have been outrageous, but they didn't really seem to capture it that well. The same way, like if you read David Goggins' book or listen to his audiobook, the amount of suffering that guy goes through, but he managed to just talk about that in a one race, 100-kilometer race. And he talked about some stuff with sleep deprivation, but you didn't really get that. You didn't really comprehend that through the documentary at all. So I think they did a really... I think that is probably the most Hollywood exciting, entertaining part of this film would have been the amount of suffering this guy had to put himself through.
Yep.
And I feel like the documentary really didn't capture that. And
well, it was his attitude. He has this like weird attitude that is like, it's not that hard for me. And like he was trying to have this like kind of holistic attitude, which is like, you know, what's hard for me is what's hard for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, like my mom is doing 5 5Ks in 5 days and that's just as hard for her as this run is for me.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
You know, there's like also this, like I think it would have been more entertaining to be like, this is the craziest shit of all time. Right. Like this is what I was feeling after 4 days and I had this many days, like my blisters. I don't know, like that is the crazy stuff, right?
Mm.
But he kind of like tried to put off this like
weird... I was like two scenes about blisters.
Yeah, he tried to put this like weird scene where it's like, oh, you know, like he had that thing, like, oh, my heart rate's really low. Like, you know, people who are obese are going through tougher stuff than I'm going through, which I kind of get.
Yeah.
It's like part of it, but it didn't really make the physical crazy event that he was doing like that entertaining.
I think that this documentary reminded me exactly like the documentary where... They had some other crazy feat. I think this guy ran that it was like a Red Bull documentary, and he ran that insane ultra event, and he tried to set the record for it. And he's like running through the mountains from
We reviewed it. Does like the long. It's like this ridge in America. Basically, right. Runs from like the top of
takes
America
people
down
like
to the bottom.
6 months to walk it or something. Yeah, it was the same sort of thing. It was potentially one of the most insane human feats, and. I mean, I guess you could blame the documentary filmmaking. Just didn't really capture the essence of what this thing was about. You wanted to see the most rawest, painful human suffering. You want to see someone at the lowest of the lows who you think to yourself, oh my God, I can't relate to this at all. This is the most insane thing I've ever seen. This guy is an absolute beast. But I didn't feel like that once during the whole thing. And I knew that that's what it was. I knew that doing that is fucking insane. But... it just didn't come across in the film. And I thought it was a bit of a letdown because I don't know how many times is someone going to go 50-50-50, right? So...
It was a letdown.
Yeah, it had a lot of potential, this movie, to be sick. And I thought it kind of missed the mark. I thought it started pretty good. But then as it kind of wore on, I was like, wow, they really have missed the mark here. Like, I just don't... I'm not into it. Like, it's not capturing me right now. So, yeah, I'm going to give The Iron Cowboy a 2 out of 5. I think for the same reason that... you know, he didn't even get close to his fundraising goal. It's the same reason the documentary sucked. I think he just like focused way too much on the doing of the event, which I get. But if you're going to go for something like that, you need to get the proper hype around it. You need to get the proper marketing. You need to get the like PR on board. He overlooked all that stuff. And I think that's why the whole thing fell short in terms of an event.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think
Sorry to cut you off. You know what? You know who did a really good job of it? It's like Ross Edgley.
Yeah.
If you look, when Ross Edgley swam around Great Britain, you could say like both those feats were pretty insane, both of them together, like pretty nuts. Think about how good he is at hyping his insane ultra events and detailing. Like if you followed his event on Instagram or whatever, dude, it was like nuts. You've seen photos of like swollen feet and passing like these insane stories.
My tongue is falling apart. It was so good. And it was similar because both had, you know, not much downtime.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, bro, like I got no time for Instagram. I got to go to bed.
Yeah.
But somehow they just, he told us, like you just wanted Ross to make it.
Mm.
Whereas this guy, you were just like, whatever.
Yeah, it failed. Anyway, what are you giving it?
I'm going to give it a 1.5 out of 5.
Oh, snap, Iron Cowboy.
Not taking away anything. Like the thing he did is crazy. Just exactly. A documentary. Just upsetting.
Yeah, we're rating movies here. We're not rating feats. So there you guys. There you go, guys. Iron Cowboy. We give it a 2 and 1.5 out of 5. So at the very start of the show, I mentioned something exciting. Guys, tomorrow we are launching the first ever new podcast on Thursdays. It is going to be called Throwback Thursday. Throwback Thursday is exactly how it sounds. We are choosing an old episode, some of our favorites from the past. We're just going to start with 2 this month and see how you guys like them. Give you something to listen to on Thursday. So tomorrow you'll be listening to Brett Contreras, the first episode that we did with him. That was one of our all-time favorites. At the start of the episode, we riff a little bit on some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, where our relationship's at now, if we've got future episodes planned, maybe some stuff that happened off-air.
If he programs like glue work.
Yeah, the truth about all the stuff he's saying. So that's what we've got coming for you guys tomorrow. So if you're excited for it, tune in, let us know, take a screenshot of it, share it. Same with this podcast as well. And yeah, if you really like the Throwback Thursday episodes, well, then we'll keep doing more of them. Guys, thank you so much for listening and we'll speak to you next week.